All right, welcome back to another episode of Archer Gray's PLM Quick 30. Thanks for listening today. We have a special guest today, and it's someone I was introduced to after reading about a program related to a topic called Forever Chemicals. And this individual works for an organization whose purpose, which I pulled from their website, is to create a world that is safer, cleaner, more prosperous, and more secure. And if that doesn't pique your interest, listen to these stats from fiscal year 2019. They have over 4,700 scientists, engineers, and professional staff. They've accumulated over 2,800 patents since 1965 and had 265 inventions and licensed technologies in FY 2019 alone. Now, if you haven't heard about some of the incredible work that Pacific Northwest National Laboratory, aka PNNL, has done over the years, I encourage you to read more about them at pnnl.gov. And I was so interested in learning more about this Forever Chemicals program and thought it'd be an excellent discussion for all of our listeners to learn more about. So now that I've built up the anticipation, I have the pleasure of introducing Alan Tuan from PNNL, who wears multiple hats but has focused responsibilities as a commercialization manager. So, Alan, thank you for taking the time to share your background and the work that you're doing.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, great. So, if you could do me a favor, could you tell us a little bit more about you and your journey and what motivated you to be where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to. So my background actually educationally is chemical engineering, but I think in the course of my studies and graduate school and things like that, I just realized that even though I love science, I think technology is exceptionally elegant. I recognize that I'm probably, or I would not be, the most effective scientist just given the way I'm built. And so that's a, I think, a first part of, you know, my journey and how I got to where I'm at now is just a love for, you know, things technical. And then at the same time, I spent a brief stint managing a corporate social responsibility program at just a boutique consulting firm in China. And I realized after that, through that, that, you know, having a positive impact in my community is just something that's really important to me personally. And so I consider the work that I do now, and I can get into it a bit, just to be a really good fit for me. I love technology. I really enjoy entrepreneurial people. I love the fact that I get to do things that benefit our community, our state, and our country.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite a compelling combination. I mean, I think everybody tries to look for something fulfilling in their life, and oftentimes you have to find it outside of work. And the fact that you've been able to land at a place that has that combination of that entrepreneurial spirit, the technology, and then doing good for the world, I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, as you mentioned, I'm a commercialization manager. I essentially shepherd or manage the intellectual property that comes out of PNNL in a couple particular areas. One of them is the battery materials and systems. I'm also kind of shepherding our chemical biological processing technologies, and then what we call advanced energy systems, which is really maybe process intensification kind of thing. So again, a lot of that draws from my background in chemical engineering. So I think the way that I describe it and what I really like about it is, in a nutshell, I work with some of the smartest people in the country and try to connect them with, you know, some of the most entrepreneurial people in the country. And the goal would be then to transfer a lot of those government-funded innovations that you mentioned at the beginning into the private sector, you know, through small businesses and even multinationals and venture capital firms, things like that, so that, you know, through this kind of public-private dynamic, we can attempt to commercialize solutions for some of the country's biggest, you know, energy and environment challenges.
That sounds pretty exciting. I mean, do you have some examples that our listeners might have been exposed to or have some knowledge about where they can connect the dots?
Yeah, I mean, there. So, you know, we do research across the spectrum and in just a lot of different topic areas. So most recently, I've been working with, you know, catalysts that can help to convert waste into usable fuel. I've been involved with a really unique tree injection device that would help deliver agricultural nutrients, separations technologies to be able to extract, you know, valuable minerals and things out of geothermal brines. But probably the one that I think everybody would have experienced at least sometime if they've traveled in the past 10 years through an airport is, you know, that technology that you have to pass through as a, you know, that full body security scanner when you're going through TSA's security check. Those security scanners are actually based on a PNNL technology for millimeter wave holographic imaging. And so we've licensed that technology to the company that makes those scanners. Those are installed in over 2,300 different installations. There's one on, you know, every industrialized continent in the world. And at least as far as we can tell right now, there's been over 100 million passengers worldwide that have, you know, been scanned for concealed threats, you know, as they kind of pose with their feet spread and their hands above their head. That's what we like to call the PNNL salute.
That's a great example. I mean, people may be inferring and putting them together about, you know, what is PNNL and what do they do. But, and I appreciate that. I assume most everybody that is listening identifies with going through the airport and doing the PNNL salute for sure. But can you tell us a little bit about the organization and how vast your technology and your patents and the work that you do benefits society?
Yeah, absolutely. So Pacific Northwest National Laboratory is a U.S. Department of Energy multi-program national lab, which means that we get funded or we have sponsors from various federal agencies. Our R&D programs really span the spectrum from basic to applied sciences. And we try to focus on critical challenges in energy, the environment, and national security. So we have a research business volume of more than $1 billion, most of that from federal sponsorship. And it ranges from things like trying to really unlock the mysteries of the Earth's climate to modernizing the U.S. electric power grid, and then also have significant efforts and success in technology that helps to safeguard ports around the world from nuclear smuggling. So, again, just a wide variety of research. Typically, it's the kind of thing that's, you know, too fundamental or too complex or too future-oriented for private industry to really desire to try and tackle today.
And so you guys are pioneering that work, and then you'll collaborate with industry to advance it and bring it to market. Is that correct?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And so as a Department of Energy National Laboratory, well, this is interesting. This is kind of a little known fact, at least from a lot of the folks that I encounter. The Department of Energy is actually associated with more intellectual property and new tech business startups than any other federal agency by far. Part of that just because of the nature of its research investments. But a big part of the Department of Energy's mission, which PNNL reflects, is just like you say, to commercialize technologies, because, you know, essentially the innovations have been developed through the investments of U.S. taxpayers. And so, you know, the thought is that U.S. taxpayers and U.S. industry should then really gain the benefit of those public investments. And so we do try to take all those innovations and push them into the private sector where they can be commercialized and taxpayers can enjoy those benefits.
Yeah, that's great. I don't think that a lot of people in the United States know about the various programs that the Department of Energy fulfills, much less how it benefits them as consumers as well. and to learn more about it and then bring some of these products that influence our lives to bear. That's one of the reasons I thought it was so interesting. So when I read this article on forever chemicals, which, I was certainly intrigued by the topic. I'm like, oh, wow, you know, you think about these products that you're using in the marketplace, but not often do you think of the components associated to it, the materials associated to it, and then work that may be being done associated to it. So I'm curious, the topic today that started this whole thing was for forever chemicals. So can you tell us what is it and why is it a focus for PNNL in the first place?
Yeah, that's great. Part of it, I think, is it's a focus because it really is a significantly big challenge. Forever chemicals, on some level, I think it's a great name, right? In some aspects, I think maybe it's connotes something that's maybe too positive. But it's forever chemicals refers to a rather complicated group of these chemical compounds. The more technical folks might recognize it by its more chemical name, which is per and polyfluoroalkyl substances, PFAS or PFAS. These are hazardous man-made chemicals. They're used in all sorts of products that have, typically a water repellent or stain resistant nonstick kind of quality. So your nonstick cookware, waterproof clothing, even food packaging, and it's got predominant usage in firefighting foams for this very reason, that they repel water and oil. They're chemically resistant, heat resistant, and so that's the reason that we like them. I think now we're increasingly realizing over the past couple decades or few decades that, unfortunately, because of those qualities, they're also very difficult to destroy, near impossible. So PFAS contamination now has been detected in, over 1,500 locations across 49 states. They're at military bases. They're in all sorts of places that maybe you wouldn't expect, because these chemicals they don't break down either naturally in the environment or in our bodies. And so we refer to them as being biopersistent. They're just really hard to get rid of.
So when you say in our bodies as well, so they're hard to track, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so because they stick around for a long time, and because they are what we would call an emerging contaminant, we're still, I think, trying to get a sense of the true maybe human health effects. But there have been multiple studies that have linked these PFAS compounds or forever chemicals to some significant health issues like elevated cholesterol, obesity, weakened immune systems, endocrine disruption, thyroid issues, and even cancer. And because of the danger of it, and because once they're in our bodies, they take a very, very long time to get rid of, the federal health advisory level is extremely low, down at 70 parts per trillion. And that's probably about equivalent, because that's a hard thing to imagine, 70 parts per trillion. But it's about equivalent to a pinch of salt put into an Olympic-sized swimming pool. So very, very, very little can cause some health effects. And a lot of the U.S. states, in the absence of federal regulation, have set even more stringent levels that are a fraction of the federal advisory limit. And so because the levels are so low, because they're everywhere, it's just really difficult to track them, to find them. You've got to try and detect it at such low concentrations, because anything above that has potential health and environment effects. So typically, in order to detect it, folks are taking samples, water samples, and sending them off to laboratories where we're using pretty advanced analytical methods to try and detect their presence at those very, very low concentrations.
I mean, why is it a focus for PNNL in the first place? It sounds like a big, complex problem that you describe, or an opportunity. I mean, depending on how you look at it. So why is it a focus?
Yeah, it's I think in part you're right. These are the kinds of critical challenges to environments and human health that a national lab is very well equipped to try to tackle. It's something that's, you know, really becoming something that people are increasingly concerned about. There's been, you know, movies now, it's in headlines. There's been a few very significant lawsuits. So this is very much in the front of people's minds. And our federal government is particularly concerned and aware and doing its best to address the problem, in part because, you know, as a component in firefighting foams, the Department of Defense has you know, really taken up the mantle to try and address the challenges, because they've used firefighting foams in their fire suppression drills and testing and things like that. So at defense sites and even Department of Energy sites, this is a problem that the government is trying to address.
So is PNNL partnering with other folks, or you're taking this on first in particular phases? Well, maybe a better question, is this a defined program, or is this a proof of concept? How do you guys approach these scenarios when it's, I guess, from my perspective, early stage?
Yeah, we definitely do our best to collaborate with others. And I should mention, I'll address that question. It's a good one. It's not just a government issue, right? I mean, like I said, these forever chemicals have been a part of consumer goods for a very, very long time. And even I was recently talking to a water district who was in attempting to be, you know, good citizens. They're recycling water, including water from industrial waste, right? So they're recycling it, trying to clean it up, and then put it back out in the environment once it's benign. And unknowingly, they had spread PFAS over their years of recycling water. So now it's a very significant problem in their district, because they had been trying to do the right thing and clean up their industrial wastewaters. So for that reason, like you had asked, I think this is definitely going to take the effort of many, many stakeholders. For us, our work is, at least on the sensor side, it really is a collaboration. So the principal investigator, the lead scientist at PNNL's name is Dr. Radha Motkuri, and he has a collaborator at the New Jersey Institute of Technology, Dr. Sagnik Basire. And these two scientists put their heads together to develop this field deployable sensor that I think you saw, which is capable of detecting PFAS at levels that are 100 times lower than the advisory level, right? So now if we're talking about salt in that Olympic sized pool, it's like this sensor can detect a single grain of salt in that Olympic sized pool. So very, very significant in terms of its technical capability. The core device is smaller than a personal credit card, so it can be used, you know, to detect PFAS compounds at the point of use. And so a commercial ready version would absolutely be a game changer. And this is, in fact, part of ongoing research at the sensor level, but also a few broader areas. And PNNL and New Jersey Institute of Technology, in fact, are looking for companies that can come alongside us, take the invention and put it into the hands of, you know, analysts, researchers, and remediation companies, maybe even consumers.
So is it available today?
It's not available today. We're working on that. And so PNNL as a federal facility, we know what we're good at, and we know what we're also not good at, right? So we are at our core a research institution. We don't have any kind of manufacturing capability or any ability to even compete in the commercial sector. So in order for us to really put some of our technologies into the market, we rely on commercial co-developers and licensees. So that's what we're actively working on. It's part of the reason why you see a lot of our communications materials out on the web, because we're trying to solicit those kinds of partnerships.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to, reinforces your opening comment and your introduction kind of yourself of, you know, how you navigated your way to find a fulfilling career of making a difference in the world, combined with, the entrepreneurial spirit and technology and entrepreneurial in the way that, as a commercialization manager, I assume that a big part of your job is to find opportunities where people can help PNNL bring this technology to market.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we benefit from the breadth of our research, right? The sort of early conceptual roots of this technology actually lie in some other research that we had been performing at the time, where we were looking at a kind of engineered material that can capture refrigerant compounds. We were looking at ways to capture, unused heat or waste heat, low level, not highly valuable heat, and use it to either generate power or, cooling. And so these engineered materials that can capture the refrigerant compounds, well, it turns out that those refrigerant compounds actually have a pretty strong chemical resemblance to PFAS compounds. And so our researchers made that connection and then thought, wow, we can extend our work using these engineered materials to not just capture refrigerant compounds, but possibly PFAS. And so, that's led to a lot of the work that we're doing now in that space is leveraging what those engineered materials are called metal organic frameworks, or MOF, MOFs. And so we're trying to use MOFs for this PFAS problem.
That's incredible how one, program or invention can lead to another one because of similarities, and then the impacts are incredible. So how do you guys look at a program like this? I'm used to the term stage gate reviews. I don't know if you use similar terminology, but is this a defined program with milestones, and what's the success criteria for the current phase that you guys are in?
Yeah, it's a good question. It sure is. And currently we have a pretty good chance at getting some federal work into the door. There are very much defined milestones in that and how we would continue to develop the material, that MOF material, as well as the sensor. We've already done quite a bit of work in this area. And so, some of the foundational fluidics and the chemistry capability to be able to detect a handful of the most common PFAS compounds, that's done. Our next step, sort of what we would look at as success in the next stage, would be to develop a field deployable prototype, because right now we're kind of limited to the lab benchtop. And then at the same time, we're looking at expanding the ability to detect not just that small handful of PFAS compounds, but really more and more of the thousands of remaining PFAS compounds, because forever chemicals, or PFAS, refers to a real large group of compounds.
So you've already proven that you can identify them. The next stage, or the stage that you're currently in, is to have deployable
Yep.
ways of identifying PFAS. And so that's the stage of this program currently.
Yeah, we really want to be able to get to have a prototype that we could then take into the field and and do real world measurements. Right now, the way we're handling it is we receive samples from various sites and perform the measurements in the laboratory. So we have some, you know, real world samples and associated data. But I think really what the next stage is going to look like is now being able to take, you know, a prototype, which could be a handheld device, or maybe if it's, you know, sort of that research grade, it might be something like a kind of a backpack or a suitcase, you know, but just something that we'd be able to take out into various sites, do measurements on location, and compare those results with those that might be, you know, coming out of a national analytic lab.
So this stage that you're on could potentially be an opportunity for some of the listeners out there that have the ability to manufacture and create equipment for the environments that you just described.
Yes, absolutely. That's something that we're actively pursuing. You know, our goal would be to accomplish, you know, sort of a sufficient amount of technical de-risking such that an industry partner would really be motivated and compelled to, you know, pick it up from where we leave it and bring it into the commercial market. Part of the value, of course, that we see is that, you know, rather than having to send each individual sample to an analytical laboratory, doing these measurements at the point of use could save, you know, hundreds of dollars per measurement, and you could get your results in minutes rather than days, which is the common practice today. So again, having sort of that commercial ready device would, in our opinion, be the best way to serve the public, our government sponsors, and I think there would be value also for the company that could do that.
And so, you know, the follow-on question, once they're able to identify it, do you have ways, or are you working on ways to be able to remove it from wherever it currently is? So water or land or any other material that you detect them?
Yeah, that's a great question, especially, I mean, I know your emphasis is on, you know, sort of product life cycle. So I interpret that to mean that you try to take it at least as broad of a perspective on some of these issues as possible. And so, yes, you're exactly right. Most of our efforts, of course, are focused on the latter part of the overall, you know, PFAS life cycle, if you would. We're not at all involved with, you know, manufacturing, like I said, but we really do address those three aspects that you described, because our expertise is in the inorganic material that can be used to capture the PFAS compound. So whether or not you put that capture material into a sensor or use it for remediation purposes, those are both emphases of ours. Those are things that we're focusing on, is how do you detect it? Once you know it's there, how do you remediate it? And then the probably next significant challenge that I think a lot of folks are beginning to look at as well is, how do you destroy it? Because again, these things were initially, at least, designed or intended to be resistant to heat and chemicals. And so it's not sufficient to bury it in the ground, because, you know, these will ostensibly last forever, right? The forever chemicals. You can't burn it, because if you try and do that, then you're volatilizing the chemical and you're sending it up into the atmosphere. Or you're chopping them up into smaller molecules that are even harder to detect and capture. So we've got some ideas about, you know, again, once you've detected it and captured it, how to potentially use light or catalyst materials or radiation or maybe all three to destroy the chemicals and make them much more benign so that they can be disposed of.
That really brings on a new perspective of PLM, certainly for many of our listeners who, you know, help create and manufacture product. But when you take a few steps back, it really opened your eyes to, you know, what product lifecycle management can really mean. So it's great and exciting work that you guys are doing, and I love that you're doing it. So when you take a step back, like I just described, ultimately, what is the goal in how you view a success of this program? Is the program ever done? Is the success being able to contain it? And what does that success mean to PNNL?
Yeah. Well, first, because you mentioned a lot of your listeners are, you know, in the creation, design, and manufacturing industry, I absolutely want to recognize, you know, again, this is something that a lot of people are beginning or have been, you know, focusing their attention on. And so I think it's important to recognize there are a lot of companies and research institutions that really do care about the environment and public health and are making significant efforts and progress in addressing this problem of forever chemicals. And really, it does take that concerted effort from, you know, policy advisors and remediation firms, manufacturers, and then state and federal government. So for us, I think, at least in the near term, success means deployment. You know, we really believe PNNL and our collaborators at New Jersey Institute of Technology that this PFAS sensor is a really special piece of the puzzle. So we'd like to be able to get it into the hands of all the other entities who could then deploy it, use them to begin to tackle this really big problem. And I think the main takeaway for me that I'd like to communicate is, you know, we're really looking for commercial partners who could either sponsor further research and development of the technology or license it and, again, help us to perform additional, you know, technical and market de-risking so that it really can be effectively moved from the research scale, you know, where we've got it at the benchtop into and onto commercial shelves.
Yeah, well, I mean, we will certainly do our part to try to promote this podcast. So, one, I mean, it's certainly an intriguing topic, and it's going to make a difference in our world. And I'm excited to see if, you know, this podcast helps, one, shed some light on to it that's supplementary to what you guys are already doing. And then I believe that we have some good relationships in the marketplace where we might be able to foster some conversation. So that's one of the reasons I was excited to have this conversation. And I'm glad that, you know, you've defined success as in the short term of being able to bring this technology to market and partner with companies that can help you do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I am curious, do you have any main takeaways or closing comments that you'd like to share with our listeners before we end the podcast today?
Yeah, probably only to thank you and your listeners. Really appreciate the chance to be able to share, you know, one of the technologies that we've been working on, that we're passionate about, and the progress that we've made towards, you know, trying to address this really big challenge of the forever chemicals. And so we'd love to, again, partner with anybody who's looking at, you know, trying to secure drinking water, control the spread of PFAS, and really understand how it moves through the environment and through groundwater, and then facilitate its remediation.
Yeah, that's excellent. It's a big call to action for anybody that can help influence this process. And Alan, thank you so much for taking the time. And I really encourage everybody to go to pnnl.gov and explore the website and look at all of the different inventions and work that they've done throughout the years. And I know that there's various opportunities that the companies that you work for could likely partner with PNNL to help advance some of the technology that they're working on. So thank you very much for listening. Alan, thank you so much for your time today and your knowledge and expertise. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Hey, thanks so much, Patrick.